Anatomy and Physiology, Gulf Coast State College. Today we're going to talk about the blood. Specifically, we're going to talk about two very important processes called hemostasis and fibrinolysis. But first, at the bottom of the slide, I just have to once again point out this absolutely sick photograph. It's a scanning electron micrograph, 3D in color, shows you one of my favorite things to look at, a red blood cell with this nice biconcave disc structure. And then we, of course, also have a white blood cell and some platelets. That's the kind of thing, of course, I use as a computer wallpaper or email to my friends. Then again, I have some really different kind of friends, I suppose. Let's start with hemostasis, and let's bust down the root words. Hemo refers to blood, and stasis means to stop, and we have to stop bleeding. If we didn't have a way to stop bleeding in the body, we would all bleed out. We wouldn't be here today. Definition at the top. Some key words in this bullet point. Hemostasis is a series of fast, localized, with a red star, responses to help stop bleeding. Fast means fast. Yeah, it happens very quickly. Localized. Well, if you're a local, that just means you hang around locally. And localized means that when we do the process of hemostasis, it only happens, hopefully, at the area where it's needed. After all, if it spread to the rest of the body, our whole body would be one big blood clot, and then none of us would be here today. There are three steps in hemostasis you must know. The first one is called vascular spasm. It is what it says it is. If I took a knife right now and sliced across one of these blood vessels in my arm, there would be almost instantaneous spasm of that blood vessel because there is smooth muscle in the walls of that blood vessel that allow it to constrict. So I have some diagrams here from your book. I just flashed up a picture of a normal non-constricted arteriole with the lumen, that's the opening of the blood vessel, wide open. But if we injure it, it almost instantly undergoes a spasm. Shown here to your right, those smooth muscle cells have constricted and narrowed the lumen of the arteriole. And that's the first step in trying to slow down or stop bleeding. Second step in hemostasis is platelet plug formation. It is what it says it is. Again, we're going to form a plug of platelets. And that is going to help us in this process of stopping bleeding. I got a nice visual coming up on the next slide. Last but not least, third step in hemostasis, you should be able to tell me, is coagulation, which means exactly the same thing as blood clotting. They are exact synonyms. Let's go ahead and continue to break this process down by looking at step number two with a visual, the platelet plug formation. Here is a blood vessel showing a site of injury here where my arrow is. Maybe that's where I just cut myself. And essentially what happens is the collagen fibers in that area, they kind of poke out or stick out. I make the analogy of a sand spur. And that sand spur of collagen fibers is really sticky as far as the platelets are concerned in your blood. And the platelets get stuck on that sand spur of collagen fibers and collect together. There are also some chemical signals involved that we won't go into in this course. But in the end, we have this plug of platelets at the site of the injury that again helps us to stop the bleeding. I know y'all just start memorizing this so you're going to get an A in my course. You're going to use this information because you want to help people. And in pharmacology, you will study a lot of this in great detail. For example, there are some people who are increased risk for a heart attack that you may want to thin their blood to decrease their chances of heart attack. And there's all different kinds of blood thinners, so to speak. One of them is aspirin and other drugs like aspirin. How do drugs like aspirin work? Well, the short story is essentially they make your platelets more slippery, so they can't form these platelet plugs so well. When I went to school, we just called aspirin and other drugs like them platelet greasers, because that's essentially what they do. They make your platelets slippery so you can't make the platelet plug as easily. The third and final step in hemostasis is blood clotting, which equals coagulation. Again, they are exact synonyms. They mean exactly the same thing. The first bullet point I have here is sort of a summary. What is it? Blood clotting is a complex series of enzyme-dependent reactions in which one clotting factor activates the next in a fixed sequence that results in formation of fibrin threads. Let's stop right there, break that bullet point down, and get the big picture. First of all, enzyme dependent. Almost every biochemical reaction in the human body depends on enzymes. We learned that in the chemistry section. Without enzymes, essentially nothing works in the human body. Those are usually proteins that facilitate biochemical reactions. Next, this bullet point mentions clotting factors. In your book, they list roughly 13 clotting factors. Thank goodness we're only going to touch on several of them. But once you activate this series of clotting factors, they kind of go in a chain reaction, like a cascade, like a series of dominoes, one after the next. And in the end, it results in what we call fibrin threads. Fibrin sounds like fibers, and they are fibers. They're protein fibers. This is the big picture. I always like to start by learning the big picture. Then I could memorize the details later. I think of this kind of like Spider-Man. And what we want to do is throw down a web, and this web of protein fibers called fibrin is going to trap the red blood cells and stop them from coming out of your blood vessels so you don't bleed to death. Off to your right is a beautiful picture, some red blood cells and some early fibrin threads. Kind of does look like a Spider-Man web starting here that's beginning to trap those red blood cells. In your text, you will find a multiple step process. Thank goodness I'm going to boil it down to only 3 steps for our course. Here it goes. First step in blood clotting, I want you to know. Thromboplastin is going to be released by damaged tissue cells as well as from thrombocytes. Let me break down the root words again. Plastin, like plasty, means to form. So if I have a nasoplasty by my plastic surgeon, he's going to reform my nose. And thrombo means to clot. So thromboplastin is a substance that's going to begin the formation of a clot. And yes, it's released by damaged tissue cells as well as, of course, by thrombocytes. I just remember thromboplastin starts with a T. T for thromboplastin, T for thrombocyte, and T for the tissue cells that are damaged. Next, once we have thromboplastin that is released at that site of injury by either my tissue cells or my thrombocytes, then thromboplastin in the presence of calcium ions converts prothrombin into active thrombin. Couple of key points here. Our blood cannot clot without calcium. We need calcium to clot our blood. You'll see that pretty much each of the steps we talk about depends upon it. And someone who knew this very basic biochemistry used it to their advantage, not just to get an A on the test, but to help people. That's what you're here for. Did you ever notice when you draw blood and you put the tube of blood on the nurse's station, it doesn't clot? If it did clot, you wouldn't be able to run the blood test and you'd have to start all over again and re-stick the patient, and they wouldn't be very happy about that. So someone who knew this, what they did was they found a chemical. That chemical they put in the test tube, and that chemical binds up or sucks up calcium out of solution so it is unavailable in that blood tube. Therefore, the blood cannot clot. That's why this is important to learn. By the way, that person's probably a multi-bazillionaire sitting on a stack of cash in the Cayman Islands. If you ever think of something like this, please, all I'm asking is cut me in 1%. To repeat this bullet point, thromboplastin in the presence of calcium converts prothrombin, which is inactive, to the active substance we call thrombin. Let the root words help you. Pro means first or the beginning of, so prothrombin is just the beginning of thrombin. Once we form thrombin for my class, the third and final step of blood clotting goes like this. Thrombin, in the presence of calcium again, converts fibrinogen into fibrin strands, which trap the red blood cells to form a clot. Let me break down the root words again, because some of you love root words like I do, and it really helps you figure stuff out, even if you don't really know it. Gen, as in Genesis, means the beginning of or to create. So fibrinogen is a plasma protein created by the liver that is the beginning of fibrinogen. Just like prothrombin is a plasma protein made by the liver. That's the beginning of thrombin. And in the end, the big picture is we want to make a fibrin net. Fibrin sounds like fibers, and they are fibers. Protein fiber threads that will trap, like a Spider-Man net, the blood cells to form a blood clot. For my course, those three steps are enough. After all, this is just a survey course. You don't have to know the 8 billion steps in your book. But what you do have to know are some clinically relevant things that relate to this. Here's what I want you guys to know. Stuff that applies to the real world. What about vitamin K? Yeah, it's a vitamin. A lot of you heard of that. And about 4 of our clotting factors depend on vitamin K, or else the liver will not be able to create them. So if we don't have vitamin K, we're going to have trouble clotting our blood. That's right. You can't clot your blood without vitamin K, and you can't clot your blood without calcium. How's that relevant to the real world? Well, it is specifically in newborns. In newborns, when you rotate through the pediatric or OBGYN unit or whatever, one of the first things you do when a baby's born, everybody probably knows, you put the cream in the eye to prevent gonorrhea and other infections. You also will draw some blood for some various tests to detect diseases that are treatable early on in life and may even save the baby's life. There are some blood tests you will learn that are mandated by state law to be drawn at birth, so don't forget to draw them. Last but not least, one of the other things you'll do at birth is you're going to inject that baby right away with vitamin K. Why? Because a baby is not making enough vitamin K at birth. The short story is that we'll learn in the digestive section is that our colon, our large intestine, gets colonized by bacteria, and those bacteria produce vitamin K, but that takes a while to get going. Did you ever notice, for example, if you have a baby, the first few poopy diapers, they really don't smell that bad? And I thought, my first baby came along, I'm thinking, I got this. I got it. This is no problem. It didn't smell really that bad. But then after about a week, the poopy really started to smell pretty bad. Why? Because the bacteria were finally forming, and that's when things got pretty stinky. In a newborn, however, colon not fully colonized, vitamin K not being made, and if that baby has an injury during that first week or so of life or a surgery, they can potentially bleed to death. So you better inject them with vitamin K right off the bat. This reminds me of something else. In certain religions, there's a tradition. They do not circumcise the newborn baby, boy, until about the 8th day of life. Now, why did that become tradition? They found out that if they circumcised the baby before that, they could bleed a lot and even bleed to death. Now, they didn't know the physiology you now know, but they knew that it went bad wrong if they did the circumcision too early. Let's talk about liver failure to also make this clinical and bring it down to earth. Remember, a lot of our clotting factors are synthesized in the liver. So your patients who have liver failure, maybe from hepatitis or alcoholism, they have trouble clotting their blood. They bleed very easily. You will see that and learn that that's a very common finding in liver failure patients. They bleed very easily, so be careful about that. Hemophilia, I don't want you to know the details because this is just a survey course. You probably heard about it. These are patients that are deficient in certain of the clotting factors, and yes, they bleed very easily. They can get massive hemorrhages that are very painful into their joints, and they can even bleed to death. You will treat those patients, for example, by administering the clotting factors that they are deficient in. Let me talk about something you do really have to know, and that's blood thinners, because you will save people's lives by giving blood thinners. Some people have hypercoagulable blood. In other words, they clot too easily. You may be born with a genetic defect, or you may have a heart valve disorder that makes you prone to blood clots, or a heart dysrhythmia like atrial fibrillation that predisposes you to blood clots. And blood clots, of course, can cause damage. The one you probably know of is the blood clots can break off and go to your brain and cause a stroke, which may be deadly. Blood thinners are based on the knowledge that you have really from this simple slide. Heparin is a blood thinner that you all administer. You may have heard of heparin. Heparin works by blocking thrombin. I want you to know that. Another one you'll hear about and you'll give to patients is called Coumadin or warfarin. Coumadin blocks development of the vitamin K-dependent clotting factors. So if you block that, again, you block blood clotting. Believe it or not, rat poison, at least in the old days, I'm not sure if they still make it this way, but rat poison essentially was Coumadin or warfarin. And when the rats ate the poison, they died by bleeding to death. That's why there was a strong warning on the boxes of rat poison that said, you know, please keep away from pets and children because you didn't want to cause any damage to your pets or your loved ones for sure. More things I would like you to know pertinent to this info. What is the thrombus? Many of you heard of the word thrombus. A thrombus is a blood clot that develops in an unbroken blood vessel. The most common type that you'll hear of is in a vein. Specifically, I want you to know something called a DVT. That stands for a deep vein thrombosis. This is something that may typically happen in people who are sitting in a fixed position on a long car ride, a long plane ride. That's why you're supposed to get up and walk around every couple hours. It may also happen to your patients in the hospital if they're laying around too long. That's why the doctor writes an order to get Mrs. Jones up and walking around several times a day, because you don't want to develop a deep vein thrombosis. They say approximately over half of a million people per year are hospitalized with a DVT, and about 250,000 people a year die from something called a pulmonary embolus. That's where the thrombosis in the vein breaks loose, floats through the blood, goes to the lungs, and causes severe lung damage, affects the breathing, of course, and can lead to death. So this is a really huge problem that you will all see if you go into healthcare. Let's now define an embolus. I briefly referred to it. An embolus essentially is a clot that breaks loose and then floats through the bloodstream and then maybe goes to the brain and causes a stroke, or maybe goes to the lungs and causes a pulmonary embolus. There are other kinds of emboli as well. You can have a fat embolus from a broken bone. You can have an air embolus from air getting into a blood vessel. All bad players. I want to also mention to you something I just learned about recently, at least in relation to the time this tape was made. When I went to school, which of course was decades ago, if we thought somebody had a pulmonary embolus, we did all kind of fancy scans. They were expensive. They took a long time to get the results. We often put the patients in the hospital on blood thinners while waiting for the results. But now some genius invented a brand new or relatively new blood test that can detect a blood clot like a pulmonary embolus very quickly. And they did it just based on this knowledge you have. If someone has a pulmonary embolus, they have a blood clot. They have a big Spider-Man web of fibrin. And pieces of fibrin kind of fall apart and break apart, and they end up floating around your bloodstream. And you could measure them in the blood with a blood test called the D-dimer blood test, which apparently is very, very good, very specific, very sensitive, has very few false positives and false negatives. And I had a loved one recently, went to the hospital. They thought maybe she had a pulmonary embolus. Doctor came back in like 5 minutes and said, nope, she doesn't have an embolus. And I said, how'd you know that? Because in the old days, we had to do all this testing and wait for it. And he said, well, I just did a D-dimer blood test. And you know me, I went home and I Googled that right away and found out this very interesting information. So yes, good stuff. You got to learn it. Useful in real life. Pretty pictures coming up. No new information here. Trying to show you, number one, early stage of some hemostasis and blood clot formation. In green, showing a platelet over here. Also, the beginning of some fibrin threads shown here in orange. A little bit later stage of a blood clot. Now we see that spider web of fibrin is really starting to build up and trap our cells. Then finally, a late stage of a blood clot. Again, just an awesome scanning electron micrograph, almost 1,000 power, shows a nice dense spider web of fibrin threads forming a beautiful blood clot and maybe saving somebody's life. This is kind of a summary slide, nothing new here again, but it does show you now beautifully the red blood cells, the beautiful biconcave discs that are now trapped by what are shown in green as these fibrin threads. So just a beautiful picture, almost 2,000 power, 3D in color for you to marvel at. And maybe that picture will stick in your brain. Visuals, I think, help us all to learn and understand and remember stuff. We can't talk about hemostasis or blood clotting without talking about the opposite process. Because remember on the other slide I said it's a localized process. If we didn't have a way to control things, to limit things, if a clot started, it might keep going and not stop, and then we turn into one big blood clot and we'd all be dead. Remember, the body likes to stay in balance. We like to maintain a good normal internal environment. So we have to have a system of checks and balances. And this process here called fibrinolysis is the system of checks and balances to blood clotting. Remember, blood clotting involves this whole series of cycles, and the cycles really amplify one another, and clots do have a tendency to enlarge, and that's potentially dangerous. You'll see people with clotting disorders where the process goes way too far and leads to serious damage. So thank goodness we have something called the fibrinolytic system. This is a system designed to dissolve small inappropriate clots and also will dissolve clots at a site of damage once the damage is repaired. So we don't want to have a clot forever, is what this says, and we don't want to have a clot spread from a small one to a ginormous one. So here's the short story, and there's more to it than this, but this is the stuff you'll see in real life and be able to use most often. Our body tissues and our blood contain substances, several of them. The only example I want you to know, I'm going to circle in bold print, it's called TPA. You should know that stands for tissue plasminogen activator, and it is exactly what it says it is. It's a substance made by our tissues that activates an enzyme called plasminogen. Plasminogen, let's break down the root words. I think you're getting the drift now. Gen, as in Genesis, means the beginning of, or to make, or create. So plasminogen is just the beginning of plasmin. It's an inactive plasma enzyme. But if you squirt a little TPA on plasminogen, it will become active, and the active form is plasmin. Plasmin is the active enzyme that pops clots, or I should say dissolves clots. But that's the way I remember it. Plasmin pops the clots. So this is our system of checks and balances to prevent us from having overclotting, so to speak, or having clots extend beyond where they should, and also our system of dissolving clots once it's time to and safe to do so. This substance called TPA, by the way, is known as a clot buster. This is a drug that you will all administer to save people's lives. You probably heard about it on the news or whatever, or in the hospital when people come in with a stroke. You will learn how to diagnose the stroke. It has to be a certain type of stroke. It has to be within a certain time frame. But in the end, for the right patient with the right type of stroke, so to speak, if you administer this clot buster called TPA, you may indeed either save their life and or limit the amount of damage they have from the stroke. That's pretty much all I wanted to say about hemostasis and fibrinolysis. I think you can understand the key importance of knowing thoroughly about these systems.